what I want to talk about is constituency versus bossiness versus title vest versus leadership. Because a lot of people tend to think that they all have something, you know, a lot in common, and they're actually very different. This is a very important thing to know, because probably the most important concept of all the things I just mentioned is constituency, meaning that in Texas they have a phrase, all hat and no cattle, meaning somebody who, you know, is a poser, somebody who, you know, has all the cowboy gear but has never ridden a horse or punched a cattle or whatever the hell, you know. Okay, the corollary in the leather community is all title vest and no constituency. Because someone who thinks that just because they win a title, it means that now they're a leader, doesn't understand how things work. Because leadership does not come from, and I'm not saying this against anybody in particular, this is just the fallacy that goes on, in that people think that, well, now I've got the title, now I've got some, you know, some sway, I've got some people who have to listen to me now. Well, no. The whole point of an ethically done title holder contest is to find someone who possibly may have some beautiful, powerful dreams. Those dreams can be magnificent and exciting and absolutely enticing to a large constituency of people. Well, if the problem is that they don't have the ability to first have that dream in the first place, saying, you know, I bet there'd be a wonderful thing that we could all accomplish together. You know, and then exciting other people into saying, you know, I like that idea too, and I think I'm going to lend my strength to that. I endorse that. Let me tell my friends. And see, that's where leadership truly comes from. Not from top-down dictating, not from being bossy, but from enrolling other people into something where they say, you know, that is a great idea. Because then the energy comes from everyone around you. You know, like for instance, I recently asked Aaron, who is hosting a big fundraiser down in San Diego, I said, how much actual physical labor did you do? You know, it was a big successful thing. He says, almost nothing. The reason why was because the dream was so powerful and so exciting and so enticing that many people decided, I'm going to lend my strength to this. So they showed up early, they volunteered. Even if they didn't officially volunteer, they showed up and it's kind of hard to describe, but I'll do my best. There's a particular stance that people do, and I'm over-exaggerating this, but I can spot it from 500 feet away, where it looks like they're poised. You know, their legs are flexible, their knees are slightly bent, and they're, like, looking this way and that way, and their arms are out like they want to hug somebody a little bit, and they're like, give me something to do. Because they're so excited about what's going on, they really want to make sure that it's a success, and as a consequence, they, you know, they're ready to do anything. And see, that doesn't happen unless what they're surrounded with is something exciting and joyful and, you know, powerful for everybody. And they're like, okay, I want to have a stake in the success of this event. That's true leadership. Okay. The whole title holder paradigm, and this is me opinionating, you know, I'm now drawing a line of distinction here, you know, putting a period at the end of the paragraph. The whole title holder paradigm, unfortunately, is mostly past its time. And people will disagree with me. They're very welcome to. But the problem is that it isn't really, really fulfilling the needs that are arising now. See, the needs that are arising now are being met here in San Diego by what I call the 724-365 policy, meaning that we support everybody all the time. There's no waiting till 4 days before the contest and going, we need one more guy. Would you please be in the contest? I'll be your friend. Which happens way too much. But by far the single biggest flaw with the title holder concept, as it is in 2013, is that my least favorite picture to take is, I'll take the photographs during the contest, and the guy who wins is at the front, and he's glowing with joy, and, you know, everybody's, you know, showering him with praise, and all is great. But out of focus in the background are the losers who are slinking off doing their walk of shame. Well, we've done our best lately, many cities have done our best lately to try and alleviate some of the pain of that, saying, we still want you, we still love you. And that is good, but there's a difference between saying it and doing it. There has to be an eager and willing and, you know, set aside place for these young guys so that they can absolutely know without a doubt that they have that support all the time. You know, you can't just, you know, phone it in. You have to actually, I mean, support is an action verb. You know, you got to do it all the time. There has to be a conscious mechanism for it. And so then, nowadays, to me, the main advantage to title holder contests is that they're sort of like the Olympics. You know, somebody wants to get, you know, an extra, you know, notch on his belt. He wants to be able to prove that he has what it takes. Good for him. You know, that's a blessing. You know, and, you know, I'll support him any way that I can. And we can't just use that as our only mechanism for finding new leaders. See, back in the early days of title holder contests, they were just ways for the bars to, you know, sell extra beer. Hey, we're doing the biggest dick contest or the best ass or whatever. And people would show up and they'd hoot and they'd holler and they'd be drunk and they'd be rowdy and, you know, blah, blah. Well, then, during the times when everybody was dying so much, then the people who were volunteering were burning out or suffering themselves. And we didn't have a way to invite people, please step up, we need somebody. So the title holder contest stepped in, you know, to fill in the gap. They adapted to being more of a, you know, way to invite people. And for a long time, that has been wonderful. And, you know, I'm not against them per se, it just said, I find them as being highly inadequate for what is actually needed. Because if we're going to have better days, we need to have everybody have some place. You know, whether they're a volunteer, whether they're a gopher, whether they're an idea fountain, whether they're a, you know, accountant type, a bean counter, whether a mastered arms personality, or whether they're a charismatic, you know, visionary, articulate, you know, public speaker, you don't know what the hell until we try it and we give them something to do and they get rewarded for it and they stick around. See, then it becomes more of a tribal effort. It becomes more of a team effort rather than expecting one person to be the bottom for the community, which is stupid. See, that paradigm, really, that's the least part. That's the least effective part. What we need is to be able to have everybody satisfied, everybody glad, you know, that they're doing what they're doing. We need to have somebody who's observant, preferably in a good public position, to go around and notice when people are doing good things and thank them. Because people who volunteer aren't necessarily doing it for a thank you, but they're sure as hell not doing it for a fuck you. And a lot of times when somebody gets worked to death and then thrown off to the side, you know, well, that's enough of you, then they feel used, they feel abused, and they're sure as hell not going to stick around and do any more work. But if they're being thanked, if the work is being spread out among many people, and everybody's getting gratitude, and everybody's getting gratified through being good people, then why wouldn't they stick around? So, bossiness. Let's talk about bossiness. The whole concept of... A lot of people, when they grew up, you know, they grew up in a household like the one that I grew up in, where whoever hits the hardest and yells the loudest gets to win. And it's not a really effective way to be. It's great if you're, you know, an ape pounding your chest and, you know, and screaming and tossing branches around. But it's not very effective if you're trying to build a team. Unfortunately, a lot of people mistake bossiness for leadership. Where they'll slam the door open and say, I'm the boss of you. Well, you know as well as I do how far that goes. And it's far more important to support people who are like that and letting them know that that's not going to work. It's not what we're looking for. It's not how we agree that we're going to be living our lives. And why don't you try this instead? Because the last thing we want to do is get into an argument with them. Because they're going to interpret that as, oh, I need to continue this behavior, only now we're going to turn it into an escalation of antagonisms. Because that doesn't work either. Instead, you just say thank you, and notice the word and that I'm using. I'm not using the word but. I don't say thank you, but, because whatever I say after that you know, is the important part. And anything I said before that, like thank you or I love you or whatever, gets disdained and discarded. So then instead, if I say thank you and what you're doing isn't quite working and we want you to do well. So what we want you to do instead is to try it this way. Why don't you try it this way first? See, then they go, oh, okay, that's the kind of behavior that gets rewarded. And it's a lot better for everybody because somebody who's bossy, they don't want to be unpopular. They don't want to be known as a jerk. They don't want people to turn their backs upon them when they walk in the room. But a lot of times they don't know any better because nobody's kind enough to tell them, this isn't working. Okay. So that's what I do when somebody does do that. And sometimes somebody's just a bully. And sometimes, even after you've given somebody 8 different chances, they're still going to do their bully routine. It's a racket that they pull on other people. In that particular case, the only thing that a bully respects is a bigger bully. So sometimes you have to drop the bomb on them. And I've had to do it. I don't like doing it. I wish I didn't have to. But sometimes that's what I have to do. And in each case, it's different, so I don't have any particular advice on what's the best way to do it. But, you know, sometimes you just have to follow your heart and say, all right, we've tried everything else. We've tried to find your human side. Clearly, you're not willing to let us see it. So we're going to go in a totally different direction and go lateral. So anyways, so I could come up with some examples, but honestly, they're not stuff that I'm particularly proud of. Yeah, really. But they've always been effective. So let's just say I have a talent for it. But anyways, so underneath everything that I'm saying is the assumption that what we want is community. So let's define community. Let's define tribe. Let's define what it is that we're really looking for. If we're just looking for people to hang out, that's a very small dream. See, if I wanted to just create a group, you know, an affinity group, you know, people who collect brass buttons, you know, from World War II, that's a pretty small dream. The moment that I create that group, the dream is dead. It's complete. Then now what? But see, if we have a bigger dream, then it lasts longer. It's more likely to extend long past after either you or I are gone. And so then if I have a dream instead that I want to bring back what I remember from my younger days, back when there was more connection between the generations, when there was more people taking responsibility for each other's safety and well-being, when we had each other's back as the default position. Now, that possibly may be 35 years of wishful thinking and, you know, nostalgia talking. But I remember that a lot happening for me when I was young. And so then my dream is to bring that back, but not just locally, but, you know, across many cities. So that's why I have so much energy. That's what drives me. You know, nobody does anything unless there's a payoff. And in my particular case, the payoff for all this energy, all this time, all this talking, all this writing, everything that I'm doing, the demon that drives me is grief combined with loss. Because I've lost so many people in my life. All the people that meant so much to me, they went away. And I spent a lot of time in deep grieving. And that's just speaking for me. You know, I can't speak for anybody else. And so then what heals me, what causes my heart to leap up with gladness, is when I see large crowds of people happy together. And I want that to happen a lot. And so then, not just locally, but everywhere, I want more harmony. I want more cooperation. I want more kindness. I want more golden rule. That's, you know, more than anything else, golden rule, as I've said before, is my number one priority. Because for so long, we haven't had that. We've had some, but I want it to be something where everybody is consciously aware that this is the plan, that this is the standard, that this is, if you're going to fit in, you got to start there. And it's a really good start. And, you know, like I said, every religion on earth includes the golden rule. Every culture includes the golden rule. Chimpanzees have the golden rule. And so then that's something that as gay men, sometimes we forget about it. We trash each other. We dismiss each other. We judge each other. We prejudge each other. And so then the reason why I'm so vehement on this topic, why it means so much, is because if we're going to have better days, we have to let go of all that. all of our programming that in order to be desirable, we have to look like a photoshopped porn model. If we're going to be accepted, we have to have, you know, if we're going to be accepted as a sir, we have to have 40 years of experience or, you know, we're of no value. Or if we're going to be a really, 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 you know, popular volunteer, then we've got to work until we die. You know, all these stupid things that we do, you know, it's time to let go of all of them and just start fresh. And so that's why I'm talking so much about this stuff.